This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Good afternoon. It is Fender Bender, of course. It is that time of the week again. It is Saturday afternoon, and you're on Joy 94.9, but for a very special occasion it is today, because we are also going live on Star Observer Digital in Sydney,
which means instantly our fan base and our listenership has doubled to 6 people we have today. Excellent. Thank you for the Star Observer for doubling our listeners. It is a fabulous afternoon in Melbourne here. Wherever you are, we wish you're having just as lovely a day as we are. It is stifling. Many thanks to Mark and Joe for another fantastic edition of the Escape Pod. We've got tons coming up today. This is, of course, Fender Bender. I'm confident in saying it is Joy's very best motoring show by virtue of the fact that it is the only motoring show on Joy. I am joined today by some guests, but one of them is not Tim Nicholson. Tim Nicholson, the usual host and anchor of Fender Bender, is at large. He's up to something desperately unsavoury and disgusting, no doubt. But he will be back with a vengeance next week. Until then, you have to put up with the sultry tones of myself, Dan Gardner. But I cannot bear this burden alone. I am joined in the studio by the two divine gentlemen, Mike Costello, who is a regular on Fender Bender, but also we're joined by Mr. Fian Tor as well. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us.
Hi, Dan. The sultry tones of Dan Gardner.
I don't know what that was. I'm sorry about that. I was thinking on my feet. You know, I was pressured. I was back.
No. There is a sultriness to the tones. There's no doubt about it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to work on my sultriness throughout the show. Thank you. It's wonderful. How have you, gentlemen? Beat Fian. Thanks for coming back again. It's been a while since we've had you on Fender Bender. How are things with you, sir?
Good. I almost didn't make it. I got attacked by wild dogs on the way here.
I was going to spare you the embarrassment of your timeliness or lack of.
Blood.
Yeah.
Dripping down.
What exactly is going on in Melbourne? There were no trams or something?
Yes,
or?
There was a tram shortage. I'm not sure what happened. I think someone just pushed them off the rails. And
caused by this intense heat, probably?
Every time Melbourne gets to more than, I don't know, 27, the city basically shuts down. It just can't handle it.
Pretty much.
What is that? It reminds me of my days back in the motherland of England. And any extreme of temperature, whether it be hot or cold, and suddenly everything would stop working. Old people would drop dead in their droves.
Correct.
Cars and trains and everything stopped. It's just ridiculous. I mean, why doesn't this happen in countries like Sweden, where they have cold a lot of the time? And suddenly everything is just fine. You know, what is it about Melbourne's weather that both extremes, cold and heat, seem to grind everything to a halt?
But you know, people always say that cars are evil and bad and terrible and destroying the world, and trains and trams are the best thing ever. And we do a car show, and this proof that sometimes cars are the best option, because I don't see any broken down cars out there. And I see trams stopping en masse, so, you know.
Well said, Mike.
There you go. Totally. Exactly. If you can't get in a car fan comment on Fender Bender, then where can you? And if you want to completely disagree with Mike, then you're very welcome. You can text in 0427JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. We're here for the next hour. We're talking about all things news. We're covering a couple of motor shows that are going on in other parts of the world, and we'll be talking about a couple of other completely irrelevant things as well. Stay with us as we go through all our different bits and pieces. But to begin with, we're going to kick off with a little bit of news, because there's plenty going on. We're going to start with some local news at the moment.
We'll start with some grim news, because when you say local Australian car news, it tends to be bad news, and we may as well stick with the theme. Ford, during the week, announced that it would lay off another 300 workers. Of course, Ford has already said that in 2016 it will cease all local manufacturing. It will still engineer things here, still design things here, but it won't build things here. And all those blue-collar guys are slowly getting phased out. And the 300 more went during the week. They'll be throughout the year they will go. They'll take voluntary redundancies. And by the end of the year, there'll only be 700 people making Fords in Australia. And at the pomp, there was 10 times that many.
Isn't that a sad state of affairs?
I mean, it is.
So is this now just the start of the rundown to 2016?
Well, the big problem is, if they're going to end in 2016 and they've only got 700 guys left now, whenever somebody leaves from here on in, how are they going to replace them? Because who's going to take a job where you know you've only got maybe 3 years at best before the whole thing closes?
Mm.
So I don't see how it's going to last to 2016.
And people knowing that these companies are in trouble, I mean, sales will potentially drop. I mean, we're seeing that.
They can't really fall any further now, can they?
Well, that's true. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you go, oh, you know, what do I get, the new territory, or do I look at something Korean or Asian or what have you? And you go, well, you know, I think it's a big consideration for a lot of buyers. How long are they going to be around?
It is. It's a good question, and only time will tell. We'll just have to keep an eye on it very closely. But yeah, it's a difficult thing to play because, of course, they don't want to get to the final hour and they still have a full body of workers on board. They obviously have to start trimming away, but it's very difficult to tell. You know, as you say, Fionn, people will now start responding, talking with their feet, talking with their wallets, maybe buying less. If that's the case, then they may have to start scaling things down quicker than they thought. It's an impossible thing to predict, and as I say, we're really only going to find out in time.
Let's not talk productivity commission reports then. It's boring too.
We mentioned that last week. But look, the bottom line is it's really sad because every time we mention anything to do with manufacturing in Australia in the car industry, be it parts makers, so Marshall Batteries, which is an Australian battery maker, laid off 70 people during the week. You know, Holden's recently said it's going. Ford has just laid off 400 people. Toyota's on a knife edge, and President Max Yasuda will address the entire workforce on Monday. We don't know what he's going to say. It could be the ultimate announcement, although we don't think it will be just yet. But, you know, it's pretty sad state of affairs.
People did get all very excited when they heard that there was going to be an announcement at Toyota. Yeah. But don't cool yourselves, everyone. This is an annual address that happens every year. It's a good way of Toyota to get in touch with their workers and get on a very personal level. So, yes, as Mike says, it could be a big announcement. It could just simply be a slap on the back saying we're the only ones still in it and haven't actually declared anything just yet. So don't panic, Toyota, at this stage. No major announcements. But we will, of course, be keeping
now, Daniel, I am a journalist, so it's my solemn duty to make things seem more extreme than they really are, so that people click on my stories.
Right. Why let the truth get in the way of a good story? Excellent. A little bit further afield, though, we are looking at something happened with those dear people at Aston Martin recently. And it was to do with something. Now, I've never heard this before. I've heard of counterfeit money. I've heard of counterfeit fragrances, counterfeit clothes, counterfeit just about anything. But I've never heard of counterfeit plastic before. But this is apparently something that has dropped Aston Martin in very deep water. They have had to recall every car since 2007 because the accelerator pedals are made of a counterfeit plastic, which can cause them to break.
Plastic's already an inferior option, and you're going an inferior option of an inferior option in a car that costs upwards of $500,000 in some cases.
But
how the hell do you justify that?
How does this happen? I just don't understand it.
I heard that the Chinese supplier did a bit of a swifty and may have done something a bit naughty and just basically supplied them something they shouldn't have.
Oh, dear.
Well, because there is, you know, it's probably a strange choice of words, but in a lot of ways the Chinese manufacturing industry is the Wild West, even though it's the East, as we call it, because there's still this sort of cowboy mentality where, you know, it's not always straight down the line. And this could be another example of that.
I'm mildly concerned about this, because it's just one accelerator pedal that has counterfeit plastic in it at the moment. What else is out there that has counterfeit inferior materials? Next time I'm on a plane, which is quite regularly, I will not stop thinking about how many dodgy materials have gone into building that thing. What else is out there that's potentially about to fail on us?
The wheels are made in Kazakhstan, I believe.
They're cart wheels.
Quality, yeah.
Yes, you can see them. And yeah, the reason that the cars have only been recalled back to 2007 is because beyond then, the accelerator pedals were made of stone.
Yes, that's correct.
Aston Martin, they love making things out of natural materials. Leather and wood and things. Wouldn't surprise me. That's the only reason it goes back to 2007. It's because it was reliable materials back then. Wooden pedals, why not?
I would like to say Astons do sound very nice.
But there is something deeply ironic about a problem with an Aston Martin. It's a super fast supercar, and the problem is that it makes it go slower.
Yes.
Ah,
it's quite ironic, really.
Absolutely good. I hadn't thought of it that way, Mike. That's good. Can you keep a few more of those morsels of wisdom coming throughout the show?
Totally.
Fantastic. Speaking of which, we're going to have to go to just a little break, but we will be back almost immediately with tons more cars and stuff and irrelevant speak. We'll be back straight away. Bear with us. You are on Joy 94.9 and in Sydney on Star Observer Digital today, your sex and sexuality and gender diverse digital radio station. This is Fender Bender, Joy's very own motoring show. Some people ask how that works. Actually, it works very well indeed. And if you don't believe me, carry on listening for the next 6 minutes.
Well, now you've put the pressure on.
My mental arithmetic. That was actually very trying.
That was pretty good.
What is that? Yeah, I'm not even going to go there. That's terrible. Look, I'm not paid to be a mathematician. I'm not even paid to be here, actually. Why am I here? This is Fender Bender.
Let's just leave. Let's just...
We were talking before the last break about a little bit of news going on around the world, and there was one other thing I wanted to talk about that it is going on at the moment on the other side of the world. The homophobic Olympics... Sorry, Sochi Olympics have started in Russia, and some wonderful things have been happening there. One of the things I actually really wanted to mention was Google, those wonderful people at Google. They the day they celebrated the start of the Sochi Olympics, they decided to put up a rainbow flag.
Yeah, was
I thought that was just genius.
It took me a while to get it. I saw it and I was like, oh yeah. That's, and then it got shared around social media. I thought, what's this? Oh,
that's
yes,
the beauty of it. Yeah. That's the beauty. It wasn't completely, yeah. Yes, in your face. But yes, good on Google. The other thing that happened at the Sochi Olympics was, we're getting away from the homophobia now, you'll be pleased to hear. Now, if any nation had started their Olympics, they would no doubt, think of the nations of the world. Everyone has their most favourite or most pride-inducing brand of car or vehicle. Imagine if the Americans had the Olympics. They would no doubt have some kind of Dodge Ram or something there with some athletes in the back parading around in the opening ceremony. Italy, you could, choice is endless there. You could parade Exotics. Around in. Mm. In Russia, they decided to parade around in Siberian-built Ural sidecars.
Oh. Ural sidecars?
Yes.
Named after the Ural Mountains, I gather.
I would guess so.
Made in Siberia. Do people in the gulags put them together? Is it like jailhouse?
I'm amazed that they made one full revolution of the stadium. I mean, what, of all the vehicles that you could have picked to show off in the opening ceremony of your Winter Olympics, they chose a sidecar.
Why not a Lada Niva?
Well, I think we all know. We all know
still my beating heart.
I'm pretty sure Putin drives around in a Lada Niva.
No, he does not.
But this motorcycle is like it looks like it's from the 1950s. They're very, very old motorcycles.
But that's cool.
They're classics.
Yeah, it's come full circle, hasn't it? Like,
yes,
50s
it has.
Chic is cool now.
I suppose
been.
So. Timeless. But come on. I mean, yes. Okay, that's good. It's showing it has a little bit of heritage, but you know, it's heritage that doesn't work very well. And as I say, I'm just amazed.
But it seems that nothing at the Olympics is working very well. The ceremony,
true,
the reveal of the five rings, didn't work. And
oops.
You know why that last one didn't come up? It's because that was the gay ring. They did it deliberately.
Yeah, they
that fifth one, they said, nah, sorry. Oh, it's an error. It's a technical error. Yeah, whatever, Russia. We know what you're up to.
Yes.
Anyway, moving on. There's other stuff happening in the world, believe it or not. If we can get away from winter sports. What is it with winter sports? That's a whole feature in itself. But we're going to talk about cars again now. There are motor shows going on at present. You know, we talk about the high-profile ones. Mike, you've even been to a couple lately. But there's one going on at the moment in a place called India. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that. And Delhi. There is the Delhi Motor Show going on right now. And it's an interesting one to look at, I think, for a couple of reasons, Mike, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to get to the Delhi Motor Show one of these years. Hopefully next year I can get down there myself. But it's kind of the year of the small SUV, and the really interesting thing about this show is in the past, Delhi and India in general was a bit of an automotive backwater, you know, and nothing of global significance happened there. It was always just things that were kind of important to the Indian market, but to nobody else. But this year, quite a few brands are having the global, full-on, first-time premieres of their vehicles in India, which is a sign that, you know, China may no longer be the only developing market that everybody's putting all their resources behind. It might be India now. And they're all little SUVs because the Indian roads, and I could vouch for this firsthand, are so rooted with potholes and all sorts of things. You need to have a high-riding car. And so car makers are now choosing India as a place to debut their little SUVs, which is really interesting.
It is. Well, you were in India for the Ford EcoSport launch,
which is
weren't you?
An Indian-built car that's sold here, and it's a small SUV.
A little SUV.
The most interesting car that was revealed this time was called the Chevrolet Adra.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And the interesting thing about that is it was actually designed by Holden in Australia.
Of course it is.
Down the road in Port Melbourne. Or if you're listening in Sydney, in the state of Victoria, in Melbourne. Yeah, it was designed down the road in Fisherman's Bend. And the GM's Indian team kind of worked on it a little bit. And the Holden guys sort of were like a godfather role, looking over the shoulder, helping them out, putting it together. And I guess it shows that while Holden won't make things here anymore from 2017, at least hopefully they'll be designing things.
Hopefully. One can never tell. Well, they did, as you say, they did have already announced that they'll be keeping their research and development team here. So there's every chance. You know, there's many great creative minds in Australia, and it would be a shame to remove all of that along with the manufacturing as well.
But there were other little SUVs there. There was the Renault Kwid, which is the dumbest name ever.
The
but it comes with a quadcopter, a remote-controlled helicopter that flies ahead of the car and monitors road conditions.
It does.
It looks like a Reebok shoe as well. It's very cool.
Yeah, so you can set your little helicopter loose. And
then spy on people in convertibles that are ahead of you in the traffic. Yeah, I remember thinking when Smart came out with that concept that had two longboard skateboards on the roof and helmet holders in the boot. I thought that is taking it to the extreme. But no, Renault have gone and upstaged Smart and they actually have a quadcopter that can follow you around.
What's the difference between a quadcopter and a helicopter?
It's got four rotors instead of...
It chops the vegetables quicker.
Ah, cool.
Slice and dice.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
People in the convertible when you happen to crash into them because you're trying to drive it with... You're trying to fly it with... Apparently you fly it with a tablet, which I'm assuming they mean an iPad.
I'd just like to say I have an Ural motorcycle and I carry two longboards on that at all times. So I take offence at that comment, Dan.
No.
But let's move on.
You don't carry longboards on an Ural. You carry snowboards on that because, of course, it's Siberian.
And a lot of spanners to fix it when it breaks.
Yes, that's right. And you definitely don't paint it rainbow colours. What else is happening at Delhi? We've got the Vision XS1 concept from Honda.
Oh, I love that one.
Vision XS1.
Yeah, it's kind of like a SUV crossover with a sort of people carrier. It's a seven-seater. Yeah. It's only got two doors. Does that make it a coupe?
Yes.
Why not?
Well, okay.
Why not?
I want one.
If you have a look at the pictures.
I'm in love with it.
Well, it's interesting. I went to Japan last year to have a look at Honda's other SUV concept of recent times, and they called it the Vajazzle. Vezel.
The Vezel.
Vezel. Oh, yes. Yeah, the Vezel. I confuse the two words all the time. And that looked awful. And this one looks really cool. So I want them to ditch the Vezel and make the Vision XS1 because it's so much cooler.
It's great. Well, those two doors, they're electrically operated, and they are huge. They open up two whole rows of seating when they're open fully. And so only the third row of seats is accessed through sort of tilting seats. But other than that, it looks like a very practical car.
Although, if you recall, Peugeot made the 107 years ago in Europe? And they had a little mini car in the city. And I had the same thing, the sliding side doors. And you thought, this is perfect because you're never going to open your door on someone else's car. You can park in super tight spaces and all that. But the downside was those stupid sliding doors added like 900 billion tons to the curb weight of the car. Well, so it was slow as anything.
That's a shame, isn't it? Because there must be a way of doing that.
And expensive too.
True, yes. But, I mean, people buy interesting ideas. People buy solutions to problems and practical things. I mean, if you could reduce the weight a bit, which I'm absolutely certain you could, and if you can't, then ask McLaren because they will definitely make you a lightweight door.
Make it out of papier-mâché.
Brilliant. Well, the French used to do that with their
That'll
cars anyway.
That'll get a 5-star NCAP rating. Yeah.
But I want to know, can you drive these cars with sliding doors with the doors open? You know, like the old Bedford vans you used to cruise around in, 18 style?
The old Mr. Whippy vans.
Well, it's... Fionn, I'm very... Have you been looking at my running sheet? Have you been eyeballing my ideas for the show? Because a little bit later, we will be talking about road rules in Australia, if you like.
Good.
And that could be one we could discuss.
Yes, can you drive around with your doors open?
Because I always...
If they slide.
Yeah. Now, I've seen many people doing that, but I've seen people doing plenty of things in cars. Doesn't necessarily mean it's legal, does it?
What about mini mokes? They don't even have doors, and you see them cruising around.
Do you know what I saw once? A mini moke. I saw it on Victoria Parade, and they were cruising. You know, Victoria Parade is always gridlocked in traffic without question.
Oh, yeah.
These guys, there were three guys in a mini moke, and they were. You know how they've got very wide sills, very wide flat sills on either side? I kid you not, two of them had a pot of beer balancing on the sills and they were cruising along Victoria Parade drinking pots of beer. Now that, I'm pretty certain, is not legal.
No.
I'm pretty sure it would make, gridlock a whole lot more tolerable, though.
It would.
Definitely.
Or it might increase road rage, though, if they can't handle their drink.
It would certainly increase.
I think that should be the Fender Bender Mobile.
The moke?
A little moke with little beer holders.
Oh,
not
I
that
like
we'd
that.
Drive it while drinking, of course. We'd
no, of course
park
not.
It first.
Definitely. It would, it would, of course, be tea that we were drinking.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be illegal. It might just be illegal to do anything other than driving. We'll come back to this
we'll
a little bit
that.
Later. But yeah, excellent. This opened up a can of worms already, and we're not even supposed to be talking it right now. I like the idea of a pink moke for the Fender Vendor car. We're gonna definitely organise that. There's another motor show that's going on at the moment, which is Chicago. Oh, actually, is it on at the moment or is it coming up?
No, it's on at the moment.
It is on at the moment.
It's on at the moment.
Thanks, Mike. I should probably do my research better, shouldn't I? Glad you're here, mate. And the car that is of particular interest there, in a way, is Subaru's, as it's called out there, Legacy, but as when it's here, it's the Liberty. We're interested in this for one reason alone, Mike, and that's the fact that it's not very interesting.
No, it isn't. But at the same time, Honda, that's not the right brand. Subaru is what we're talking about now. Subaru's been pretty smart with this because a few years ago they made this really sexy, exciting Liberty, the fourth generation car that we thought was like a Japanese BMW. And what happened? They didn't sell any. Yes. Globally, it was a massive flop. Mm. Then they came out with this big, fat, lardy, overblown one for America and China, and they sold millions of them. It's hugely popular. And so now they've kind of compromised. They've made a car that's somewhere in between the two, and it does look a little dull. And this is a mid-sized sedan, like a Mazda 6 rival, and it looks a little dull, but at the same time, it's perfect for the sort of people that buy a Liberty.
Well said, well said. And I am happy to go on record saying, although I don't think it's the most exciting-looking car, I actually rather like the way it looks. You know,
it's
nothing
harmless.
But it's mild, in the same way that, you know, vanilla flavored stuff is probably a bit boring, but I happen to really like it. And you know, the color white for, you know, painting your walls in your house, it's pretty boring, but it does the job and it looks quite good. This car is the equivalent of vanilla flavored stuff.
Well, that being said, that segment of car, I mean, you've got a Nissan Altima, boring. You've got a Honda Accord, boring. You've got the new Liberty, boring. The Holden Malibu, boring. Mazda 6 is all right, but this is a segment that's in dire need of a bit of sex appeal. It needs to be shaken up. And right now, not many companies are doing it.
What about a Liberty WRX?
A Liberty WRX?
Yeah, or a Liberty STI.
A big bonnet
scoop. Like a GT, maybe. Although, rumour has it they're not going to bother doing that this time around.
Oh, God. So they're going the other way, then.
That's what you hear on the grapevine, yeah.
But dull is obviously selling, so they're just, you know.
Well, we've got to remember, most people don't really care about cars like we do. It's just a mode of transport.
It's an A to B compliance. That's right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, as you were saying earlier, Mike, there's everything to be said for looking after your existing customers. And as a gentleman that we work with said the other day, that he's not convinced with the look of the new Lexus. They've gone down this sort of spindle grill styling path, and he doesn't like it. Now, this may well be to do with the fact that he's been around Lexus many years. He's been around a lot longer than us on the planet. And when you try and change something, it's not always met with the reaction that you want. And Lexus arguably is trying to go for a younger crowd with this new spindle grille. But for all those people who used to like the Lexus brand and the sort of relatively mild styling of them, it's not a good thing at all.
Good news is they can now go and buy Subarus.
That's
filling, come full circle.
Filling the boring gap for them, is it?
But maybe we should talk about a car that's not quite so boring as the new Liberty.
We can do, we can't just yet, because we're going to have to go for another little break.
One of those, eh?
Yes, yes, but we will be back. Stick around with us. And at the moment, if you are listening in Sydney on Star Observer Digital, do exactly the same. This is Fender Bender, you're on Joy 94.9, and we will be right back with some more wholeheartedly interesting topics. You are on Fender Bender. This is Joy 94.9 and in Sydney on Star Observer Digital, your sex, sexuality and gender diverse radio station. Thank you for joining us on this wonderful Saturday afternoon. It is, I am told very reliably by the Joy clock, that it is 36.1 degrees outside. That's a new feature. I'm still getting used to that, but it's very nice. Before the break, we were talking about the motor shows. There's plenty going on around the world. And we've got to Geneva, the big one. This is upcoming.
Ooh, love Geneva.
Not far away
the
now.
The Canberra of Europe.
Oh, I'm not sure they'd be very happy about you describing them that. There's nothing wrong with Canberra.
Just demoted the country now.
There's plenty going on. And we were talking a little bit earlier about Holden. There could be something exciting happening in the way of Opel. Now, Opel no longer exists in Australia. That was big news when we reported all about it a few months ago. But yes, there is an extreme Opel Astra that will be exhibited at Geneva. And it's based on the OPC, but it's gone even further. It takes its mere 200 horsepower up to 225 kilowatts. That's about 300 horsepower. Same size engine, but bonkers. So kicking off with a really good, really exciting car there already. That's we you know, motor shows just wouldn't be the same without some extreme performance.
Let's just be clear. It's actually called the Extreme. This is part of the car's name. It's not just an extreme car. It's the extreme car.
I like that.
It's like when car makers have the nerve to call their car, like the Skoda Superb.
Yes.
And the Ferrari. Yes. La Ferrari.
Oh,
the
that
Ferrari.
Is just nauseating.
And the extreme Opel Astra. When car makers set themselves up for a fall by saying, this is the bee's knees, this thing. It better be good. But the regular OPC Astra was, and I say was because you can't get it here anymore, was amazing. However, there is an odd chance that down the line in the future, the Astra might be sold here again as a Holden. Who knows? And if so, I hope something like this happens.
Or an HSV.
Hey, now that would be good. Because they did that a while ago, didn't they? They did the HSV Astra. It was an Astra,
wasn't it? VXR or something like that?
Hey, HSV needs to come up with something because there won't be a Commodore to play with.
Indeed.
At least absolutely not.
Right. Maybe this is what we're looking at, yeah. I tell you, if it does come back and it's got 224 kilowatts, then they're going to have to do something about that front-wheel drive layout, because in the OPC, which is a lot less powerful, it didn't handle it very well
at all. It was
well
a bit torque steery, wasn't it?
Was dreadful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It steered by itself.
It did. Yeah, you
into
just
a
get
ditch.
In it. You'd never
the
know
wrong way.
It was exciting. You never knew where you're going to end up. It was sort of like, you know, it's like you just don't have to plan your day. Just get in an OPC and you end up somewhere and go, oh, well, I had no choice over this whatsoever. And the gearbox was dreadful as well. But anyway, I'm sure they'll make improvements if we do ever get that, and there's every chance it will come to Australia. Another interesting car we're looking at, it was at the moment it's only a sketch, but Skoda have revealed a drawing of their Vision C.
Skoda.
Yes, getting the pronunciation right. Thank you there, Fionn. I'm not going to try that one.
Skoda Vagon.
That's the... yes, who was it saying it that way, Mike?
Just someone I was speaking to once, so we won't go into. But...
Names.
Skoda is the Czech arm of Volkswagen, and it's got very boxy styling. It's sort of the utilitarian arm of the Volkswagen empire. Mm. And it obviously has decided that it needs to sex up its range a little bit, and it's revealed this really rather interesting looking sketch. It looks a bit like a Ben CLA or a CLS or one of those interminable number of four-door coupes, as they're called now. So you've got a sedan and a wagon, and you've got something in between that's a sort of slinky four-door type coupe. I don't quite know what to call them. But anyway, they are what they are, and this is another one of them. And, you know, if Skoda was to come up with a cut-priced rival for the Mercedes CLA, it'd be a pretty worthy looking thing, I would guess.
Absolutely right, because Audi's now got its competition in there with the A3 sedan. It's just recently launched. Not exactly what you call it, one of these four-door coupes. And on that note...
Sexy car, though.
I would... A3 sedan.
I love it.
Damn right. Love that thing.
I want one.
It's the automotive equivalent of Beyonce.
Yeah.
You sort of add a big bum on an already pretty body, and that's the A3 sedan. I don't like this term, though, four-door coupe. What do we think about that?
What's incorrect?
It's a contradiction.
It's some marketing humans, I won't say anything more derogatory than that, coming up with a term and foisting it upon the general public and people swallowing it. It's not a four-door coupe. If it's got four doors and a boot, it's a bloody sedan.
Exactly.
It
right.
looks a little slinkier. It looks a little cooler. Yes, but it's not a coupe. It's a sedan.
The term coupe is two-door, and I believe it stems from... an even older French word about a two-seat carriage, you know, like horse and cart.
Exactly right.
And it's got to be two doors.
Many of the... Yes, good... absolutely spot on. They do. They come from the old coach building terminology, as does cabriolet.
As does shooting brake.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely right. So you're breaking the very rules that have been set in many years of heritage. Please stop calling them four-door coupes. They're just nice-looking sedans, all right?
Yes.
Something else that's going on at Geneva is... a cheeky little number. You know, I'm not going to say it's very exciting, but it is notable by virtue of the fact it could be Australia's cheapest car.
And it's also named after a vegetable.
Oh, yes.
The Celeriac by Suzuki. No, it's called the
Celerio.
The Celerio, sorry, yes. And it replaces the Suzuki Alto.
Wait a minute. Do we know it's Celerio?
Yes, or could it be, will be called
could
Celerio.
Could it be Celerio?
Oh, listen to it.
That's beautiful and very nicely done. Being with all the excellent pronunciations today. Okay, Celerio, it could be then, yes.
It's not Alto anymore.
It is definitely not Alto. Yep. And I'm a little bit sad about this because the name Alto has been around for years and years and years, and I think it's a great name for a car.
As
it's not bad.
Yeah.
Alto, it sort of inspires images of, altitude and you know, alpine.
Loftiness.
And, yeah, Celerio, like Mike says, I just think of a not very interesting veg.
It makes me think of cereal.
Yeah. Interesting.
Cardboard style cereal.
Okay, so the Suzuki Fruit Loop, that's going to be at Geneva, and it's a perfectly decent little car. At the moment, Suzuki is Australia's cheapest. The Alto is Australia's cheapest new
car. Now that the
car.
Chinese Chery J3 doesn't meet regulations, it's been axed, and yes, the Alto inherited the throne. That car comes out of India, but it's looking like the Celerio will be sourced for Australia from Thailand, which means it's likely to probably be built a little better. Not that the current one's that bad, but you'd take Thailand over India, generally speaking, for where to get a car built. And Suzuki's dead keen, to keep it as the cheapest car on the market. So, you know, look out for that early next year.
Absolutely right. It's currently under 12 grand, I think, which makes it a pretty cheap little car.
Yeah. Affordable cars can be, you know, quite good little things. And will it be a three-cylinder still?
I guess so. I don't know.
If it's three-cylinder, I love those little... the little
funny
character you get
cylinder.
From the
it's funny, isn't it?
Engines.
Like around, I've, you know, we talk, we frequent the journalism circles and talk to journalists frequently. And it's funny, the one thing that I never thought would unite motor journalists in Australia is the three-cylinder engine. But no one seems to dislike it. It's there's something really approachable about it. It's not pretentious. It's not trying to be too shouty. It's just a great little thing. And I'd not met one other motor journalist who dislikes the three-cylinder
Until you've driven Ford's new three-cylinder turbo engine, never mock three-cylinders, because that thing is amazing.
That's lovely.
And Honda's working on one that I was lucky enough to drive in prototype, guys, not long ago, and that's even better again. So don't mock.
Even BMW.
Be a good thing.
BMW and the new
Mini. Minis are three-cylinder.
Yeah, that's going to be hot stuff.
And let's not forget BMW's sensational, yet to be launched here or anywhere in the world, i8. That's
yes,
a three-cylinder.
Yes, supercar, hybrid supercar.
It is. That's a 1.5-litre three-cylinder turbo, and it produces... hang on, I'm going to get
a million kilowatts.
Let's just leave it like that. Yeah, a million kilowatts. No, it's the most powerful production engine litre for litre that BMW have ever made.
Go BMW.
1.5. It's a million kilowatts.
Yeah, it's a bazillion.
We are going to go to just a very short break, but we're coming straight back with Mike, Fionn and Dan. You're on Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Yes, you are on Joy 94.9, but for the next 6 weeks, you are in Sydney on Star Observer Digital, your sex, sexuality and gender diverse digital radio station. Welcome back. This is Dan, Mike and Fionn in the studios in Melbourne. Wherever you're listening, though, from, I'd love to know. 0427-JOY-949 is the text, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Let us know what you're up to on this fabulous day, whether it be motoring or otherwise related. I don't really care. I like enjoying people. I can vicariously enjoy people's day just through text or email.
There's a letter here from Frank, who says, what cars do you guys drive?
Really, yeah. Frank?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you drive, Dan?
I drive a very old 1999 BMW 318 IS. It's a manual and it's gorgeous. Why are you asking this question, Frank?
Well, Frank obviously wants to know. I drive a Commodore.
Where are you going with this?
It's
exactly
awesome. VX.
I know where you're going with this, Fionn. Are you talking about Australian cars and things that you should get very excited about and icons in Australia that may well be going on very in the near future and may well have something to do with 12 hours at a place called Bathurst?
Very possibly.
Right,
very possibly.
I see. Very good. Very good.
Yes,
seamless.
The big motorsport event this weekend in Australia is the Bathurst 12 hour. And I know not everyone's excited about it, but I am. mainly because we have some star power in it. Eric Banner is driving a Lamborghini.
Ah, okay. Now, the question, of course, that will be on everyone's lips is he going to crash it like he does in every racing team center? No, sorry, that's not fair. No,
we know Eric listens to this show, so
yeah,
we better be careful.
Sorry,
we better be careful.
Oh, he's texting me already. Oh, for God's sake, sorry, Eric.
Banner, you rascal.
Yes, so 12 hours of Bathurst.
Yeah, so basically it's a 12-hour race endurance. It's grueling. It's more about, you know, the mental capacity. Can you last for this grueling race? Can you go the whole distance? And
That's a question I ask myself day in, day out.
Can you go the distance? That's the big question. So this year is very exciting because there's a lot of fancy cars, a lot of big stars. And I think Mika Salo, XF1 drivers in it. Lots and lots of big-name V8 supercar drivers, Craig Lowndes. And they're talking about breaking records this year. The cars are going to beat, you know, the fastest times ever set there, apparently. Races on tomorrow.
Yes. How can you... There's a very easy way you can watch, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. If you go to the website, bathurst12hour.com.au, there's a live stream. You can watch it for free. It's awesome.
Fantastic.
And it's going to be, what is it, like 40 tomorrow in Bathurst?
Not
40 degrees.
Yeah.
And they're driving a car for 12 hours.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? Imagine the seats. They'd be disgusting.
Ooh, the smell would be beautiful.
Oh, dear. You imagine the drivers, racing drivers, universally have way too much testosterone. You imagine it'd be like a badger set in that car.
And you're wearing a fireproof racing suit, you know, no air conditioning. It's just... Ugh.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
Ugh.
Oh, can I ride Pillion? No, there's an innuendo there if ever I heard one.
All right.
Okay, yeah, sorry, moving on. I got all excited, didn't I? It happens occasionally. Now then, Mike, speaking of being excited, you have driven something that is definitely worth mentioning. You were on a launch recently for a new Infiniti.
It had air conditioning too, so I wasn't dying inside,
so
which
no
was good.
Seats,
Infiniti is a brand that maybe, you know, a lot of people out there don't know anything about. It has a massive challenge ahead of it. So we all know Toyota owns Lexus. Lexus is Toyota's luxury brand, and they pretend that it's not really part of the Toyota empire. Infiniti is the same for Nissan. It's just Nissan's luxury arm. Launched in Australia about 2 years ago, has sold very few cars so far. It's got off to a pretty disastrous start, but it's not been selling the sort of cars that Aussies like to buy. Now it has one that they think will, and it's a rival for the Mercedes C-Class, the BMW 3 Series. It really competes in the volume end of the luxury market. But when you're a brand new brand, and no one knows what you are or who you are, and you're trying to sell a $50,000-plus luxury car against BMW, well, how the hell do you do that? How do you get people into your car when there's so much more badge cachet in something German?
Presumably, you have to make it really bloody good.
Yeah, you do. And thankfully for Infiniti and for those who are going to go out and have a look at it, it is really bloody good. It's really well equipped for starters. It starts at about 52 grand. And under the bonnet is a Mercedes-sourced 2-litre or 2.1-litre turbo diesel engine, which is a corking engine.
Hello.
So globally, Nissan, Infiniti and Daimler-Benz share engines and all sorts of things, and this is one of those examples. But you climb a bit further up the range and you get a hybrid. Now, hybrids are normally sort of the conservative fuel-saving option, but in this case, it's actually the sports option. 270 kilowatt, more than 450 or so newton meters. It's a sports car, 5 seconds, 0 to 100 k an hour. It's an absolute bullet. It's
That's
a V6
quick.
With a hybrid system, so a little electric motor there, and two clutches and a regular transmission. And so it doesn't use much juice, and it hoons along, and it's quite amazing, and it's sort of unique in that way. And the most expensive one's 75 grand, the cheapest one's 50 grand, they're all well equipped, and they're very, very strong dynamically as well. I was quite impressed.
So, up against its main competitor, Lexus, would you say that's fair?
Yeah, and in some ways it's better, and in some ways it's worse. The Lexus brings much more refinement to the table, and probably a nicer cabin environment as well. But the Infiniti has a dynamic edge that's probably second only to the 3 Series when you really throw it at a twisty road.
Wow.
A really interesting thing about it is it has steer-by-wire. There's no actual mechanical link between the steering wheel and the axle.
Right.
It's just
that
an
is
ECU with
terrifying.
Three cables.
That is scary.
There is a mechanical backup. So if the cables give out and the ECU dies, there's a mechanical backup that forms and you can actually steer the car off the road and
plow
into
that?
A ditch. Mm. So what happens is when you start the car, it disconnects.
I'll tell you what's scary, though. Because if you find some sort of program, you can hack into that car and take over the steering, and you're just on your iPhone, you steer that car into a brick
wall. There's a movie in that.
Well,
there's a franchise in that.
Not just a movie. That's you're dead right. This is happening all the time. Do you remember a little while ago there was that bunch of hackers that got together and announced they were going to publicly... What was the car they used? Was it a Prius that they decided they were going to actually hack into and demonstrate that they could override some of the basic safety systems in the car?
And what, hold the occupants hostage, if you will?
Yeah, and electrocute them. Yeah, used its batteries to cause some kind of like chamber of doom.
Zap
really? No, I made that up. That bit up. I realized it wasn't very interesting, so I thought of something really.
But the more advanced and the more electronics and software based cars get, I think part of it does scare me. Just give me a traditional, you know, steering wheel hooked up with you know. Rack and pinion and axles and now it's all computer driven. And
well, Infiniti says there are benefits to this, and there are. The main benefit is one of the dreaded downsides of any car is when you're driving on a corrugated road is kickback to the steering wheel, and it's when there's feedback from the axles. The axles vibrate, it sends up through the steering column, and you feel an unpleasant vibrating sensation. It can sort of throw you offline. In this car, there is no actual physical connection between you and the wheels, so there's none of that. It's always smooth, no matter what the road condition. The downside is... When we talk about handling, the most important thing is feel and feedback. You need to actually have a sense of where the wheels are on the road. It's a very important part. And you know, if a car isn't exciting and visceral in that way, you kind of question the point of it being dynamic at all. And Infiniti, in my opinion, hasn't quite got that right. It does feel a bit disconnected, almost video gamey. And maybe it's something you get used to in time. There's no doubting it's hugely competent, and you can carry tremendous speed through the corners. The inputs are minimal. The chassis is fantastic. But it's an acquired taste. The good news is the base diesel version, which for mine is the pick of the range, has a conventional steering system that for my money is better and gives you a more, maybe not objectively as strong, it maybe doesn't handle quite as well, but it feels better when you're doing it. And for me, that's more important.
I've always found it's better if it feels better when you're doing it. Totally, totally. It's a good advice for life.
I love a
good
feel.
Totally. Yeah, I wonder what your hands were doing underneath the desk there.
Look, he gets bored after 40 minutes. He has to get something to keep himself going.
This is true.
The important thing about this, though, is, okay, they may not, from your review, Mike, they may not have completely cracked that fly-by-wire steering at the moment, but there's one important thing, and that is I remember years ago when they were talking about the technology that existed, they said the problem is that legally it's a minefield if it fails. What you're talking about is there's the manual override, which has
correct
now put that to bed. What this means is now every other manufacturer will go, excellent, there's the green light, they're now developing their own systems for fly-by-wire steering. And as we know, when everyone gets into the competition, it gets much better.
It has
better.
Huge upside and huge potential.
Yes.
And it's really reassuring to know that should that ECU break, and keep in mind there are three ECUs and three cables, so you have to have three computers break, which would be incredibly unlucky. One breaking, maybe two, maybe three, unlikely. But if that does happen, and the very worst happens, there is an actual steering rack that's kind of just sitting there waiting.
Okay.
And as soon as the ECUs give out, clunks into place, and you can steer the car off the road. So you're not going to spear into a ditch unless evil hackers take over your car.
Well, that's the question, of course. Mm. Anyway,
I'm working on it.
Watch me. Fionn is, he's like Neo. He's already cracking the code in there. Now, one thing I wanted to mention just before we go was a little story that popped up on our radar, which was a gentleman, a motorcyclist, has been fined recently $146, not for breaking the speed limit, not for popping wheelies or endos or doing burnouts, but for taking both his feet off of his footrests.
What?
$146
for doing
that.
Criminal.
Where was he putting his feet?
Behind his head. No. Just literally, you know, giving your legs a stretch while you're cruising along.
Waggle your legs.
That apparently is illegal. And it got
what kind of cop pulls a guy over for doing that?
A bored one. Did you say cop or cock?
Both.
There you go. we'll leave it like that. Yes, so apparently that's illegal. And it got us thinking, didn't it, that we wondered what else is illegal out there that we didn't really know about. And there's a great article that someone has written listing some of the... And I've got a little list here. I'm going to put these to you. I want you to tell me how much you think you get fined in Queensland for leaving the window of your car open and then moving to a distance greater than 3 metres away.
$0.
$44, apparently.
Well, as in if you leave your car window open and then walk out of the car to somewhere else.
Yes.
So that's cruelty against cars?
But
or
the only person that's going to get hurt is you, as in your car's going to get stolen.
The argument is that if you make it easy for someone to steal your car, you're making it easy for them to commit a crime and they could potentially do
and
nasty things.
And $44.
Yeah, that's a bit of a deterrent, isn't it? Yeah, well, look out. Yeah, so apparently it's in the Queensland, it is illegal to leave your window open or, in their terms, leave your car unsecured and move to a distance greater than 3 metres. I like how they've got this all sewn up with the specifics. What about this one? In New South Wales, it is illegal to cut in on a funeral procession. How good is that?
So why do you have to be told by the law not to invade a funeral?
You imagine.
Isn't that just common sense?
The thing that makes me laugh about this is it's obviously born out of an incident where someone got really pissed off and they made a law about it. So some absolute bastard has been driving around like a maniac and cutting in on the... You know, come on, have a little respect.
You know what you can do now, though, in the Northern Territory? You can go as fast as you like for a very short stretch of the Stuart Highway.
Oh, because they've got point-to-point cameras?
No, because they've taken the speed limit away.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yes.
Because there never was a speed limit and they put one on and the road toll actually went up.
Yes. So there, when people go, oh, you can't speed, you can't break the law, it's like, well, you can do as fast... If you've got a car that does 400 k's an hour, Bugatti Veyron, you can do 400 kilometres per hour on that piece of freeway.
Fantastic. Suddenly I can see a lot of PRs going, now we're going to do our next launch.
Exactly.
I'll tell you what you can do. You apparently, in New South Wales, you're allowed to have a beer on your lap while you're driving, open, but you're not allowed to drink it. Isn't that awful?
No.
Who could possibly
I love the smell of beer on my lap.
Totally. It's like trying to eat one cashew nut. It's impossible. You just can't do it. And the other thing, a lot of people think that it's illegal to drive without a seatbelt on. It isn't, under one circumstance alone. Do you know what it is?
Naked.
You're giving birth.
No, no, it is actually reversing, but I like naked better, so I'm going to change the laws to be that. You are allowed to drive
terrible
everywhere.
Rash. If you're naked with a seatbelt on. We don't want that.
No. We don't. And on that note, we will leave all our dear listeners with a vision of Mike naked with a rash from a seatbelt. It is time to go, but thank you so much for listening. All those people are on Star Observer Digital Radio today also. Stay with us for the next 6 weeks, because that's exactly what we're going to be doing. From myself, Dan Gardner, and the Mike Costello, the one and only Mike Costello, and Fionn Torr, thank you so much. Join us again next week on Saturday's afternoons for Fender Bender. Coming up next is the divine Hannah with Little Fish. Safe driving.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.